It's Tuesday, December 22nd. The playoff race is heating up in the NFL. We had a nice gambling weekend. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles are the talk of the town. The Chiefs are easily the best team in the NFL when they want to be. And J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Jeff Schwartz alongside the now miserable Jets fan, Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz, the smarter than you. Gabe, look, the upside is you get to hire a new coach and have Sam Darnold on your roster next season. And you get to see the transformation of Sam Darnold into Ryan Tannehill or Josh Allen or Alex Smith or Baker Mayfield. That's the positive, buddy.
No, stop it with that. I thought you were joking. I saw you tweeted something about that. Why can't Sam Darnold do what those three guys have done? He'll get a new offensive coordinator to work out. And I texted you, just so the audience understands, I texted you, is this satire? I thought you were just screwing around or trolling. There is no chance in the world that that happens for Sam Darnold. None. Zero. And this is coming from a guy who watched him play at USC and rooted for him. I wanted this to work. It ain't gonna work. New quarterback, new coach, new everything. That's the only answer. We'll get to that in moving the line. I'm wearing a Lakers shirt to indicate to you that football season's over in LA. We're focused on basketball now.
Which starts weirdly enough, I think this week, right?
Does basketball tonight. Start this week? Let's go. Tonight. LA.
Starts tonight. And so, and what's funny is if this was not a pandemic, you would have been in the crowd at SoFi Stadium with a Trevor Lawrence jersey already on, mm-hmm. and you would have had your heart just torn to shreds as Sam Darnold completes that 3rd-and-6 pass, which my favorite bet of the weekend, by the way, was Sam Darnold under 202 yards, and he got over 202 on that last pass of the game, by the way.
That's what he always does. All of his yards. All of his yards come again like a dime package, end of the first half. Nobody's really paying attention. He's got 36 yards passing for no reason. That's how it always works.
Look, God,
I don't even want to talk. I don't know why we wasted a minute at the top of the show talking about the Jets when we have to deal with them later on in moving the line.
Because it's just the Jets and it's football and football's glorious and just it is what it is. And let's get to the main topics of the day. We will get the Jets. Don't worry, folks.
Okay. So the main thing that I think people have to talk about are the Chiefs and the fact that they won their 6th straight one-score game. Okay? That has some people very scared if you watch ESPN and Fox Sports 1 and all our buddies at those networks. But our friend Trey Wingo put it this way after they beat the Saints yesterday. They've now won in Baltimore, Buffalo, Tampa, Miami, and New Orleans. So let's just say, Jeff, we don't need to worry about them. You've told me, don't worry about them. The Saints, on the other hand, they're a mess. Breeze looked bad, let's be honest. Yeah. And he then said after the game, he's not 100%. Thomas is out.
Of course.
So, listen, people can debate whether they're done or not, but what I think is really happening is we're getting distracted from the fact that the Packers are clearly the team to beat in the NFC. Like, clearly.
Yeah, I think it is very clear that the Packers are the team to beat, even though they don't have an impressive, well, I guess they beat the Saints early in the season, right? So that was their impressive win. Otherwise, they've lost to the Colts. The Colts came back in that game down 14 points second half, and they got murdered by the Bucks. So the Packers are still, you know, they still don't have that signature win. I mean, I guess, again, New Orleans would be that signature win. But that was so early in the season, right? Teams are different now. I don't know how you can consider, was it week 3 or 4, a victory they had. But that's very important because that will give them home field advantage. And teams are going to have to go now through Lambeau Field in January to win. And the Saints are not a team that's built Drew Brees, especially to win in that weather. And what makes the Packers so dangerous is their offense. Their offense is really good. And you take the Shanahan system, right? The Mike Shanahan system that Kyle obviously runs now, Sean McVay runs, Kyle LaFleur runs. And that system typically works with okay quarterbacks, right? Guys are just okay. At, you know, around, you know, the 8th to 12th best quarterback. The best one recently might have been Matt Ryan, who won the MVP in this system the year the Falcons went to Super Bowl. But you know, it's Jimmy G's in the system, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, Case Keenum. You know, he played in the system, you know, with the Vikings, what, 3 or 4 years ago now. So the system works, but now you add in a Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers into the system, and we're seeing the benefits of Aaron Rodgers, by the way, being willing to adjust the play, the kind of the style of play that he has liked over the years to allow more of what Matt LaFleur is really good at in this offense, a lot of boots, play actions, deep shots. They're running the ball pretty well. They look good. The one issue, obviously, is rushing defense, which, again, I'm not so worried about that because against the Chiefs, you just have to, the rushing defense doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter unless you're playing the Tennessee Titans, who actually they have this weekend. I think the Titans might beat them just for that exact reason. They'll just run the ball all day on the Packers. But in the playoffs against the Chiefs or the Saints, it's not so important, in my opinion. Run defense is only important. I don't even know in this day and age when it is important. When is rush defense important?
It doesn't seem like a stat that I would be fixated on. You have mentioned the home field advantage mattering a lot to the Packers, and it mattering to anyone else who wish they could be home but might have to go to Lambeau. So they're in great position to have home field advantage now. They're 6-1 at home. You mentioned the Titans game. I see that as sort of the signature win that you're looking for. So if they win this coming weekend, then nobody can sleep on them. But like, no. Honestly, other than talking about Rodgers as a possible MVP, by the way, 40 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. I think he's probably number one right now. I do still get the sense that they're like the third or fourth topic in the rundown on all our favorite shows. I don't think that anyone's paid enough attention to them.
I'm with you there, but I think it's because, again, they haven't played a great team recently outside of the Colts, and they lost that game. And some of their games, like the Chiefs, have just been blah. Like this weekend, Saturday night, right? It's just like, the Panthers covered. I mean, the Packers are kind of in the same boat of not covering some of these games. Now, they have not been, they've been bigger favorites than the Panthers. So when they win by 8 points, it's not covering, right?
Right.
So I think that's partly why. And I think people, and this is good for the Packers, have now gotten used to them being good this season.
Yeah.
And so it's not a fascination each week of, are the Packers going to be good this season? Remember, home field advantage is very important this year because you get one bye in the playoffs. So that's one less game, obviously, you have to win to get to the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship game, whatever it is. And the 7 seeds this year are going to kind of be a little interesting. Right? The Ravens, I think, will get in the 7 seed. They're playing some good football right now. So if you're Pittsburgh or Buffalo, I don't think you want to see the Ravens in the playoffs. You know, the Arizona Cardinals might be the 7 seed in the NFC. They can be really good if Kingsbury gets out of his own way. Like he's just a coach. I don't know what they're doing, but Murray threw for over 400 yards this weekend. I mean, he played really well in offense. So they're a team getting the home field advantage this year is so important. So if Green Bay can do that, I think they're a clear favorite to win the NFC.
You mentioned the offense and Rodgers being willing to go along with this idea that worked for a bunch of average quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Can I propose to you that maybe instead, since we all know Aaron Rodgers was calling the shots in Green Bay as McCarthy left and the new guy came in, that really Aaron said, I'd like to do that. Find me a young coach who can bring that system to me and I'll turn him into a winner, not the other way around. That Matt LaFleur right now is basically just doing for Aaron Rodgers what he said he would do. Isn't that more likely?
I don't know, because it just seemed like Rodgers was hesitant to adopt the system. We even heard him say things like, I didn't like running a lot of, was it play action pass or something that he didn't like doing? I forget what the exact term was, but something like I didn't like, or pre-snap motion, it was a thing, right? He didn't get, in Mike McCarthy's system, they don't move very much before the snap. And he had to get used to running, motion before plays. And I think it took him a while to get into the rhythm of this offense and to trust Matt LaFleur. Look, he obviously had trust issues with Mike McCarthy. And so now you bring a young coach in who had not had many years being an offensive coordinator, and now you thrust him on Aaron Rodgers, who's already skeptical of coaching. And I think it took Rodgers some time to buy into that Matt LaFleur knew what he was doing.
But he seems like he knows what he's doing, and they flashed a graphic during the game yesterday that put him, with the all-time great Green Bay coaches. And, it's only a couple seasons.
Crushing it.
But yeah, his numbers are better than anyone, including the guy that stadium's named after and the most famous coach of all time who has the Super Bowl trophy. So he's off to a hell of a start. The premise of this first topic was we can save time on the Chiefs. They're the best. We can save time on the Saints. They look like crap. Do you mostly agree with those two statements? I mean, can we save time there?
I don't think, the Saints obviously would be much different if Drew Brees came back healthy, and obviously he was not, but I think this is more an indictment on your boy Taysom Hill. If Taysom Hill, they saw Drew Brees like this in practice, right? I assume he threw the ball in practice. It was like, we got to play him. We can't play Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
At one point in the fourth quarter, I was watching my dad. I think I turned to my dad. I was like, Drew Brees is 9-for-24 today for like 135 yards. Like, what is this? What are we watching? And so I think he finished 15-of-34, something around there. Look, the Saints issue too, and I've seen this happen now 2 years in a row, is they've been underwhelming in the postseason, right? They lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago at home, and they had not lost a home playoff game before that with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. They lost last year to the Vikings. So I don't know what to expect from them in the postseason. They're built well. The defense was outstanding yesterday. Defense played well game, and still they allowed 32 points to the Chiefs. I mean, like, that's the
yeah.
You got to score against Kansas City. And you got to score you got to score a lot of points. It's so hard to play against. And Pat Mahomes, I mean, the stuff he was doing yesterday, it's just not fair. What do you tell the defense when the dude stops on a dime, kind of retraces, goes up the field and throws a 30-yard strike to Tyreek or Sammy or Kelce, whoever it was? What do you tell the defense? Sorry, guys. Better luck next time.
They played the Hardman touchdown. I think it was number 3 in the top 10 on SportsCenter last night.
Yeah, the back corner one.
Yeah, and while they're running the highlight, John Anderson, who's great, obviously, he goes, I don't know who we're giving the top play to. Pat for throwing it or Hardman for catching it, but what was that? Like, the rolling left, like, flick across his body to the only inch of the whole field where the ball could be, and the guy makes the play at the end of it. Like, it was unbelievable. It really was. And but these games are close.
They're close, which again does worry me, because I think that a sign of a good team is blowing teams out. I really do. The Chiefs last year were blowing teams out, even yesterday. So yesterday, they gave the Saints 2 free points before the end of the first half. Should have been 7, right? The ball's punted, less than 10 seconds left. Robinson just tries to run across the length of the field for some odd reason, the width of the field, I should say. The ball gets hit out, goes in the end zone. The Saints should have recovered for 7. Instead, they got 2 because of safety, rolled out the back of the end zone. And those are free points they're giving away. And then again, it comes down to they're up by 2 scores, right? They're up, I think, 29-15. They're up 2 scores. And again, the game comes down to having to convert on a 4-minute drive to end the game. I think they're cutting it close. And you can say, well, they're going to wait till the playoffs. This was a playoff game. They played the Saints. Like, this was an important game for them. The idea, by the way, that the Chiefs held back wrinkles is that's a fantasy that fans make up in their head. That's just not true, that teams hold back plays. Did you watch the game yesterday? They ran that play with Tyreek Hill, motioned like back and forth 8 times, scored a touchdown. They ran a speed option. They ran that little pass to Travis Kelce, a little Dr. Yep. Pepper 2-handed pass. Like, there were wrinkles in there all game. It worries me, Gabe. You know, you have Tennessee come to town, Baltimore come to town, and, you know, they're running the ball well, and they're scoring a bunch. Like, are you going to end every drive with Pat Mahomes making an amazing play to keep it alive? It's possible. I mean, it happened. It keeps happening.
Well, Pat addressed it after the game. I saw him say, you know, yeah, I know people expect us to win these games by more, and it's nice to win by 20 or 30, you know, in a way that they used to. But it's important to learn how to win like this. And maybe he's just trying to put some positive spin on it. But I don't know. I'll give him some credit for that thought. Like, maybe it is important to be tested. Maybe it's worth practicing. Can you close out a game in those final 4 minutes when it's a 1-score situation? Like, is there anything to that? You played. You tell me.
I mean, there definitely is the idea that we're good at the end of games, but I would think that they would like to just not have to worry about it each week.
Obviously. It seems like it. I mean, you'd like to do it the way the Warriors used to do it. And just, like, win by the end of the third quarter and not have to worry. But, you know, sometimes you do it the way LeBron does it, where you got to pound away for 4 quarters and take 7-game series sometimes, but you win. Let me ask you this. We're talking about the NFC and anyone who might be able to contend with the Chiefs, since we're saying the Saints are probably no longer that team. It seems like the Packers, the only other team that I hear mentioned in there, confuses the hell out of me, which is your buddy Tom Brady and the Bucks. They snuck out the win yesterday, barely beating the Falcons. I mean, took another miracle, or I guess a tragic loss for the Falcons. Can we just agree they're not very good? The Bucks are just not very good.
They're the most confusing team in the NFL, outside of maybe the Rams at times, which is they scored 31 points in the second half yesterday.
That's yeah.
a lot of points. This is an NFL game. It's not a college game, right? No. It's an NFL game. It's hard to score points at that rate in the NFL. And so the most frustrating part is that they can be really good, but they're not. And so how do you trust them at all in the playoffs? So Tom Brady, as the 5 seed, which they're probably going to be, they'll be 11-5, will have to go to Washington and play the Washington football team in the cold, in the wet possibly, in the snow possibly. that first wild card weekend game. Well, actually, it's Tampa Bay. It probably won't be the first game. But they're going to have to go to Washington. Do you trust them to go into Washington and play against that defense? I do not. So that's the problem. It's a trust factor. There's a couple teams in the NFL that kind of the theory, like, they can get hot and win. The Bucs are one of them. They have the talent there. If they figure out how to freaking play on offense, they have a chance. Their protection schemes are so bad. They look like guys that tell Tom Brady all day. I don't understand it. I go back to coaching there because Tom Brady for 20 years has figured out how to pick up a blitz and find the hot guy. But in this offense, they just don't do it. So I'm leaning toward coaching on some of that. If they get hot, they have a chance. The Rams. I know the Rams lost the Jets. I know it's fun to laugh about them. But their defense is still really good. And if they can, their offense just plays poorly against bad teams for whatever reason. Like, they're not very motivated. If their offense gets hot, because they're going to go in this weekend. I'm telling you right now, I'm picking the Rams to beat Seattle this weekend. Mm-hmm. Rams are going to Seattle. They're going to beat Seattle. And the Rams can get a home playoff game. Win the division. Like, they're going to be one of those teams, like Rams and Tampa in the NFC. If either one kind of gets hot, starts to click, they have a chance to do some damage, but I don't think they can beat the Packers in the end.
All right. Now, you said something that we're spending more time on these first topics than I expected, but I think it's worth it. You said something that reminded me of a Bruce Arians quote from after the game. And he was doing this same routine where he's sort of trying to get in Tom's head a little bit. And he basically said, well, I mean, look at him. He's the best in the fourth quarter. Look what he did for us. Look, what a fabulous fourth quarter. Kind of proves he can do it for the other three quarters, too. It's like a backhanded compliment. Like, you know, say Tom's the best at the comeback, but why not just be good the whole game? We can do that. I'm curious if maybe there's something about this Arians-Brady relationship that's a little bit of a different take on the Belichick relationship that's kind of working for Tom at 43. You seeing anything in that?
I mean, they're just, Bruce Arians is so public with it.
Yeah.
Belichick was never, like, that's what, I mean, I think Belichick pushed Tom Brady, but it's not like he did it more in the meeting room, right? Where he'd be like, the local high school quarterback can do better than this. But Bruce Arians just does all of that in public.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the trick then, because Tom's a very public figure, and maybe it actually cuts through more if he feels a little bit, you know, embarrassed. I'm not sure. Belichick, by the way, not going to the postseason for the first time, and I don't know, it seems like my whole damn life, but it's probably about 12 years. End of everything in New England, or is he just going to go figure out a way to get Matt Stafford and turn them back into a playoff team in a year?
He's going to trade for Sam Darnold.
Stop.
Be a playoff Let contender.
God bless him. I hope for both their sake that works out. That'd be lovely. Solve two problems at once. Let's move it along. I want to come back to some other teams in the AFC that we probably have to talk about because every other damn show is talking about them. If you want takes, you got two ways to have a take. It's that the Bills can beat the Chiefs or that the Browns can beat the Chiefs. Obviously, our buddy Colin's been all hot on the Bills and this weekend helped his case. But then last night, because of a primetime game and Baker looking pretty good, everyone else is like, "Woo, maybe the Browns. So is this just boredom or is there something to either of those two teams having something real going on?
So the Browns to me defensively would just get smoked by the Chiefs. I mean, if you watched the game last night, the Giants, what, had two fourth downs not converted in the low red zone. Colt McCoy was moving the ball up and down. Like, that was not a problem the entire day. So I think the Browns are a little bit of time away. Plus, again, when Baker Mayfield's pressured, he does not play well. Like, I just feel like that's too much of a variable. If he can get, you know, if someone can get pressure on him, he's just not going to, that's not what he does very well. So I don't expect that to be a thing. Now, Buffalo's interesting. Obviously, Josh Allen played great. But if you look at Josh Allen, even this season, and I was obviously wrong about Josh Allen. It's kind of funny. I tweeted right after the Super Bowl, I thought the Bills were not going to make the playoffs. Even this is before, by the way, that Tom Brady left. Before they got Diggs, like all these things happen. People are like, see, even though I believe I picked them to make the playoffs on our podcast this year.
Yeah, so you've talked about them the way you've talked about the Browns. That's why I like putting them together.
Yeah.
They're fine, but they're not going to win a Super Bowl with those quarterbacks. So,
now the thing about Allen, and here's the thing about Allen too, and this is very important, listen to this, is that the people like me, most of us, who said he was never going to make it to this level, we had history on our side. We had the entire history of the NFL on our side. Everyone who said that Josh Allen was going to make it, you just had thoughts and prayers because this has not been done before. The historical jump that Josh Allen has made between year two and year three is unprecedented in NFL history. There's one quarterback in the last 30 years that started their career with two two underperformance, under average seasons, right? Like underwhelming seasons.
Crappy, I think, is the way we put that usually. Crappy will do.
No, too not crappy. Like it's whatever the word is. But basically, there was the standard of like, oh, below replacement seasons.
That's nicer than crappy. Okay.
And they've not panned out in the NFL, in the history of the NFL, except Alex Smith. This is the last 30 years, I say. Alex Smith, because Troy Aikman was like one of them way back in, you know, in the early 90s. But Alex Smith and Josh Allen, two. That's it. So the change that he has made in his game is unprecedented. So if you said, oh, I always knew this was going to happen, you know, you did not. You wished it was going to happen, but this has not been done before. So credit Josh Allen, credit Brian Daboll, credit the Bills. They get all the credit here. I was wrong. They've done a great job. But I think defensively, again, it's not going to be enough for the Chiefs. And we saw the Bills play the Chiefs already this year. I mean, they scored 17 points. I don't know if they can do enough in Kansas City in a playoff game to beat the Chiefs.
Okay. Well, I don't see anyone stopping them from scoring 30. So I guess the question is there anything the Bills...
I mean, the Bills just scored only 19 against the Steelers. I mean, it's not like they've scored a ton of points every year, every week.
Okay, fair enough. We could trade games for when they have scored 30-plus yes. and when they haven't. I guess what I want to know is, my mind, being an AFC East guy, even when the Bills have not been great, I've always associated them with a tougher-than-expected defense. And, like, you don't want to have to play the Bills in a must-win because you never know, they might pull something. And I just feel like they create turnovers. This is all based on nothing. But that has been my impression of them for 30 years. Are you saying there's no defensive playmaker there who can do something to confuse Patrick Mahomes?
I mean, no one else really does. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't like who. We saw this weekend. Mahomes was hit. He was battered. He was confused. He looked bad at sometimes. Bad's a wrong word because he always looks good, but he just looked bad. And they still put up 32 points.
Yeah.
Like, what are you gonna do? Sometimes I don't know what to tell people.
What about, I know, you know, when Buffalo's healthy, they've got a few good defensive backs, at least guys with names, right? Sometimes it's hard for regular Joes like myself to evaluate how good Josh Norman maybe is anymore, or Tre'Davious White, or any of these guys. Like, we just hear they're good, and so they stay good in our mind. Do they have anyone who can cover Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill? For pretending there aren't five other weapons.
It's yes and no. I mean, the Chiefs do an amazing job of getting guys open. I mean, like, that's the thing about it. We've seen now there's two ways to slow the Chiefs down. Either sit in cover three, Niners and Chargers, okay? Which I think week 17, Chargers-Chiefs would be kind of an interesting game because the Chiefs will still need to win that game. Otherwise, they could lose a tiebreaker to Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And Justin Herbert kind of playing well. Like, I'm excited to see that game. That could be, you know, the reverse almost last year, where last year the Chiefs entered the weekend not having a bye and ended with a bye, where this could flip in week 17. Sometimes the Chargers play the Chiefs. They play them close. Or you're Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick has done an incredible job, even this season. And what Belichick does that no one else can really do, because that's who Belichick is every single play they do something different. So one play they're going to double Travis Kelce. One play they're going to double Tyreek Hill. One play they're going to sit in zone. Oh, now they bring up pressure. And so they always keep you guessing, right? Like, you don't know what they're doing. And so that makes it difficult to figure out where the read is going to be. And then when you bring pressure up the middle against the Chiefs interior offensive line, you get Pat to move off a spot, and it makes things more difficult. So I don't think Buffalo has that capability to do that. So that's why my thing is always, now you have to just outscore the Chiefs, which the Bills, if Josh Allen's on, they could totally do that.
Okay.
But the Chiefs, I'll say this, the Chiefs defense is really fascinating to me, Gabe, because their numbers are not very good. Like, they're like 32nd in the NFL in the red zone. They don't hit the quarterback very often. They're not good on third down, but they just make enough plays every game. I don't know what it is. Like, you watch them play this weekend, and you know, they allowed 29 points. I get it. But you're like, okay, not bad. Like, but then they allowed 29 points. I don't know what it is about this defense. They kind of have that thing going for them that champions do, where you just make enough plays in a game, knowing your offense can score, to help you win that game, right? They did enough. They forced a turnover, forced another turnover, and just did enough.
Yeah, I'm just the dummy who doesn't really know how things work. But to me, the answer is Honey Badger. is just like that wild card guy. Like,
yeah, but for a couple weeks he wasn't like himself this year. Like, that's the thing, is like he definitely is the difference between not winning a Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl, in my opinion, last year on defense.
But I'm saying the like, we need a turnover, boom, they get a turnover. He's the guy who can do that. Like, yes, the statistics and all the other things you mentioned, that's a unit issue. He seems like the guy who could, you know, pull a rabbit out of a hat. All right, so then Baker is the guy everyone wanted to talk about first thing Monday morning because he wins in primetime and he doesn't suck. And Kevin Stefanski's getting probably the most love he's gotten all year because there they are with 10 wins. And he's like, you know, soon we're going to get to Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. Kevin Stefanski went to Penn. Like, that's coming. Get ready. But it does seem like, I'm kidding on coach, it seems like he's made Baker grow up a little bit, if Baker ever needed to grow up in the first place. Debatable. So what's going on there? Why does that work? And are you sure that's not a problem?
I think for me it works because there's a stable system in place for him. He has a real adult coaching him, and the system produces easy wins for Baker Mayfield. And remember, when you install a new offense, it takes 8 to 10 regular season weeks for you to feel good in that offense. So now we're seeing, we're past that point in the year, obviously, where now Stefanski knows what Baker's good at. Baker knows what he's good at, and there's a lot of confidence in the system they're running. There's a lot of, you know, they run the ball really well, play action pass, find some shots here and there. They move Baker out of the pocket. And so he's just getting in more of a rhythm. Again, the problem with Baker is the pressure situation. And it's hard to pressure them because their offensive line is really good. And I don't think they're ready yet to win multiple playoff games, especially on the road. They have to be on the road in the first couple of weeks. But there's, I think, some optimism if you are the team heading into 2021.
All right. Well, we're going to touch on how many games each of these teams can win when we do moving the line. Let me talk to you about something that we've been texting about a lot. And I don't know exactly where you're going to go with some of this. Basically, Jalen Hurts looked good, right? They lose a close game to Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, but his stats were great. He made a few amazing plays. He's a, you know, a ball into the end zone away from winning that game. You know, it was a close game. So Schefter's now reporting that Hurts will start again next week, which was up in the air because coach wasn't really committing to that after the loss. Carson Wentz is sort of grumbling, depends how you want to interpret it. I'll just put it this way. The only move, and your boy Dan Orlovsky seems to be saying this, is the only move is to move on from Carson Wentz. Or, I guess, as you've suggested, move on from coach and find a coach who can work with Wentz. But it seems very obvious the team wants Hurts to be the quarterback, which means they need to keep Peterson the coach, which means Wentz is moving out of town. Is there any other take here on how to fix things in Philly?
After this week, I don't think there is. So here's what I think has to happen. So Jalen Hurts far exceeded my expectations the last 2 weeks. I watched most of that game this weekend because I bet on the Cardinals, and I'm glad they covered, and they should have. They played really well. And look, the sustainability of Hurts is questionable. I mean, he made some throws yesterday on third down that just you can't do every week. I mean, there was a play he got strip sacked, picked the ball up, and threw for first down. Like, that's not going to happen every week, right? But what I like the most, and it's very obvious now because now we've had two different quarterbacks start instead of Carson Wentz, right? We had Nick Foles and Jalen Hurts play. And we had Josh McCown play, by the way, at certain times, right?
Mm-hmm.
The offense looks different when Carson Wentz is not playing. And the difference is, one, it's in rhythm. Yeah, there's a rhythm and a pace to the offense. All of a sudden, the wide receivers catch the football. The offensive line plays better. There's just a play calling consistency, and there's some dynamic plays and some deep balls and some wide open guys all of a sudden. And it looks like a real NFL offense. And so when you can have the real NFL offense with Nick Foles, with Josh McCown, and with Jalen Hurts, but not with Carson Wentz, who's the problem? Carson Wentz is the problem. And so I think even 2 weeks ago, I was like, look, I've said on the show, you have to get rid of Doug Peterson because I don't know anymore, Gabe, because it feels like Doug still knows what he's doing, but Carson Wentz is the problem. And that contract's hard to trade. But I'll tell you this, there's more reports coming out now that Carson Wentz doesn't like the situation he's in. Fine, sure. But the thing that concerns me more than anything is this idea that he's mentally crumbled because they drafted Jalen Hurts. That if that's true, ship him out right now. Because if you're that mentally weak to where the drafting of Jalen Hurts makes you lose all your confidence, then that's a you problem, Carson. Because the NFL is going to find your replacement all the time. That's their job. They're going to draft people to replace you. And I get it. Not often do they draft a second-round quarterback a year after a new quarterback signed a deal. Fair enough. But they gave you money, a lot of it, because they want you to be their guy. That's how they're showing you they like you enough. And I'm a 7th-round draft pick. You know how many years they draft? I put 8 years in the NFL. Do you know how many years they drafted my replacement? 8 freaking years, okay? That's what the job is. And I went out there, used his motivation to play better. Aaron Rodgers, they drafted Jordan Love in the first round. He's being his MVP season. Tom Brady, I looked back. They didn't draft all second and third rounders. They drafted some fourth and fifth rounders. But for the most part, the last 10 years, they drafted a third rounder, second rounder every third year. Tom Brady, middle finger, Jimmy G, I'm going to keep playing really well, right? But for some reason, Carson Wentz has let this get to him. That's a Carson Wentz problem. It's not an Eagles problem, not a Howie Roseman problem. It's not a Jeffrey Lurie problem, their owner. It's a Carson Wentz problem. And if he cannot fix that, that's not the Eagles' fault. That's on you, buddy. And so I think that it's very clear that there's a disconnect between Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. And if I were choosing right now, I'm not sure Jalen Hurts is the guy that will win me a Super Bowl, but he's the guy that will win me games now and that we have a competent offense moving forward. I would choose that path over the Carson Wentz path. Now, if you're the Eagles ownership, you can say, okay, let's reset this offseason. Let's talk to Carson, talk to Doug, find a way to make it work and try to make 2021 the most productive season we can with those two. But Gabe, you watch a lot of football in your life. Do you expect there to be some sort of melding of the minds between Wentz and Peterson in 2021?
No, I don't at all. And I think both of them assume they'd be better off elsewhere with a different coach or different quarterback. I think both of them assume the other guy's the problem. So there's no way they're going to make it work.
It just feels like the more and more we watch him without Carson Wentz, that it feels like it's a Carson Wentz problem.
See, here's the thing though, that in this relationship, which in some ways is kind of maybe a little bit similar to Brady Belichick in the final year there, where they both kind of want to prove that they were the guy and the other guy was just along for the ride. Peterson took him to a Super Bowl, won him a Super Bowl with a different quarterback. So, yeah. Like, it isn't as an easy an argument for Wentz to make, even if he's the more talented of the people on the roster. Like, it just seems like Wentz is the guy who's got to go. But let me throw this scenario, which is a third at you. I saw this from a blue check guy. I don't actually know who this is, but Dennis Chambers tweeted this crazy idea. So I want you to evaluate this. If the Eagles believe Jalen Hurts is their guy, go all in on him. Let's get weird. Here's another idea for you. Fire Doug, offer Lincoln Riley a blank check, identify and acquire a legit number one wide receiver no matter the cost, do the Kyler Arizona model in Philly, win a Super Bowl in Philly with a new coach and Jalen Hurts as your quarterback.
The Arizona Kyler Murray model is not that great. Is it producing a lot of playoff wins so far? Zero playoff wins.
This wasn't my take. I just wanted to see what you thought.
The funny part is the Kyler Arizona model is like the Doug Peterson, Nick Foles model.
Right.
Like we've seen it work before. He just needs a better quarterback than Nick Foles to make it work. And maybe Jalen Hurts is that guy who is the better quarterback than Nick Foles. So no, I think you choose between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson and the money involved and the less hassle is keeping the coach.
All right. Well, so if they keep the coach, the quarterback's on the move. Let's throw a few possibilities at you for where he could go. You mentioned the Colts a week or two ago. I was intrigued. Phillip Rivers looks pretty good. I don't know what his long-term plans are.
It's a one-year deal for him this year.
Well, would he re-sign for another year? And would they prefer Rivers at whatever he costs to Carson Wentz in a rebuild? I don't know.
I think that Frank Reich would rather have the long-term stability of Carson Wentz. I know it's a lot of money. I get that. But that feels like if he had to choose, I get 4 years of Carson Wentz or one more maybe year of Phillip Rivers, he would take Carson Wentz.
Okay, interesting. So I think we have to consider that the most likely outcome, and we'll keep an eye on that. Jets doesn't seem likely, but thoughts, Jets, maybe, no?
Unless it depends on who they hire. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like there's anyone on earth, unless it's like the guy from North Dakota or something who knows Carson personally. I don't see that happening. Cowboys, it's always fun to say, we don't think Cowboys, do we?
No, they're gonna just sign Dak back.
Right. Denver always seem like they're looking for the next quarterback. Denver, nah.
Well, I mean, if they move off of Vic Fangio, maybe, but not at the current moment.
Okay. And then Washington, who can't make up their mind who their quarterback is.
It's a lot of money, man. I think the Colts are the best option for everyone involved.
Okay. You said you watched most of that game. I had it on for a little bit. More, you know, commentary was done on the commentary than the play. Aqib Talib was like filling up my timeline. Did you have any take on Aqib Talib? Why do you think people are freaking out about the sound of him calling a game?
Well, people were talking about his voice. I guess I only listened to about 5 minutes of him calling games. I think that people like the kind of the rawness of it. Like, he was definitely not polished, right? Not at all. And he used a lot of football terms. A lot. And I thought he did a good job of explaining exit, but like, I understood it fully, but I don't know if everyone else understood what he was saying sometimes. But I thought what was really good was his partner did a really good job. When I remember there was a specific moment, they ran it was against, and Tilly did a great job of this. It was cover three, and they ran the outside receiver ran like a go or cleared out. And then the slot guy was Zach Ertz. He ran a corner route, and Talib was like, "Oh, cover three. If you run that seven, and the corner does this and that, then the guy's wide open." And then his play-by-play guy was like, "Well, explain the seven to us." He goes, "Well, it's a corner route. So you run 10 yards up the field, in a post you break to the middle, and a corner you break to the sidelines." Like, that was great. That was great for everyone involved. Yeah. So I didn't hear a lot of them, but I think people like unscripted, more raw. But again, be very clear about this. It's very important, guys. And I know, Gabe, you know this as well, is that social media is a very small percent of the people that watch these games. All right. And so it's a hard time explaining this to people. Like, "Oh, how come this guy has a job? How come he says simple things? How come he doesn't talk about analytics?" Because the rest of the country doesn't give a shit about that stuff.
No, they don't.
And they just want to hear Troy Aikman, former Cowboys quarterback, bumble around about quarterback play, right? Like, that's why, guys. That's why, like, there's this fine line between what we talk about on a podcast or what we talk about on TV. I mean, I was talking to Mina Kimes about this the other day, because people don't understand, like, a TV show, NFL Live, is not there to be breaking down specific X's and O's on a freaking trap run, okay? It's there to talk about big NFL topics, because most of the viewers aren't on Twitter. They don't care about that stuff. They want to hear about Jalen Hurts and Carson Wentz. They want to hear about the Cowboys, the 49ers, and the Packers, and the Chiefs. They're not here to talk about X's and O's. So while Talib was great and people did like him on social media, I saw more of the older crowd kind of push back on that, because he wasn't a traditional play-by-play guy or color guy. I think he catered a lot to the younger crowd on social media that enjoys more of the explanation of the X and O's behind football.
Yeah. Well, I know he preps because I work behind the scenes on a show with Trey Wingo, and he was Trey's guest this week. And he talked a lot about how he preps for these calls, and he takes it seriously. He does it just like he used to get ready for games. So it was cool to see. When Aqib Talib is trending, you know, for the whole afternoon, I had to wonder why. And I was curious to hear your take on it. I hope that more guys with your view of football, and I'm saying you and him together, who can kind of nerd out a little bit but still sound like a regular dude, I wish they'd put more guys like that in the booth. That's all. All right, let's move the line. This is our little betting segment. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll make you pick over-unders.
All right.
All right, we're back with our little over-under game. I want to know over-under 0.5 wins for these teams if and when they make the playoffs. Are they going to even win a game at all? The Bucks.
No.
You're going to take under 0.5. They go
0-1
in the postseason. All right, interesting. The Dolphins, who would currently be in, it looks like they'd be set to play the Steelers.
No, their offense is just not good enough.
Not good enough. They get in, that's a triumph. Then they're heading home early.
Agreed.
All right. The Cardinals, who look like they're going to probably get in, but then would probably draw the Saints.
I don't trust Kingsbury, but the way Drew Brees is throwing the ball right now, I would... If I had to put money on this, the over would probably be, what, plus 150 in this game?
That's like your
specialty. Money line, 200. Yeah. I would put money on the over here. Just because I think the value would be good if you're looking at the teams we're talking about.
Yeah, I think what you're sort of driving at is if there's going to be sort of a quote-unquote upset, the Cardinals are the type of team that could be a value, could be an upset pick for the first round.
Yes, yes.
All right, well then let's talk about a team that still need a few things to go right, but I sort of see them ending up in the postseason, which are the Ravens. If they get in, depends on who they play, but they would seem very deadly. Over under 0.5 wins for them if they get in.
I think they could beat the Steelers if they play the Steelers. I'd go over.
Yeah, yeah, because they wouldn't have to play the Chiefs first, assuming the Chiefs keep the bye. But no. Then we're talking Steelers, Bills, Titans, and I think they're a game with all of those teams.
Agreed.
All right.
Agreed. They play the Steelers tough. One game with Lamar and one without.
Yeah. All right. Last, for obvious reasons, NFC champ, whether it's the Giants or this, you know, DC, or who the hell knows who else might still be alive technically, anyone in the NFC East able to win a game?
No. If Washington wins this weekend, they're in. They win the division.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see them as probably a 7-9, maybe an 8-8 division winner, and then they bow out quickly. All right, so let's move to that next tier of teams. These are teams I would expect to win one game. The question is over under 1.5 wins. So can they get to 2 wins, maybe see a conference championship game? We covered them a lot. The Browns.
I'll give them 1 win, so under.
Okay, so they get in, they do their job, and then as soon as they match up with a better team, they're out.
Yes.
All right. The Colts, the mystery. I saw you tweet it. Week after week, we say, when are we going to learn about the Colts?
If they played the Bills in round one, they would lose. I would go under.
If they get the Bills in the first round, they'd lose. And if that shakes out a little bit differently, if the Bills don't do their job in the last
So this is basically saying that these teams would make the conference title game to win 2 games.
That's, I think, how that math works, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say no then, no.
The Colts are not going to get there. I wouldn't have thought so either. All right, the Titans. It will definitely come down to who they play, but can they win more than 2? More than 1?
Yes, they can. I mean, defensively, they're just a disaster, but I could see them making it back to the AFC Championship game, sure.
All right. We hit on these guys earlier, the Rams over in the NFC. We definitely think they have a shot at the NFC title game.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. And their path might be simpler because they might get that NFC East team.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the Seahawks, who we think might lose to the Rams this coming weekend, but they're still, you know, the Seahawks.
They're just so up and down lately. I'll go yes here. I could see them doing it.
I think their defense is actually going to turn back into a real defense.
They've been playing better lately.
Yeah, they really have, and now Russ isn't playing great, but I think he'll obviously be a gamer in the postseason. Their D will be good. I don't know, man. There's like 2 or 3 teams in the NFC where you're like, I don't think we've talked enough about these guys. We've been spending all our time on the AFC. They're one of those scary ones.
The defense is playing better, but offensively, they're just kind of into just funk lately.
Yeah. Well, and my fantasy team has felt that funk, by the way. Thanks for nothing, Russ. All right. Chances the Jets turn it around before the Falcons, who found yet another way to hand themselves a loss. I have no idea how they managed to do it this weekend, but who can get their stuff back in order faster? I'm going to say over under 1% chance it's the Jets.
I'll go over here.
Oh, you like the Jets rebound faster than the Falcons?
Get it. They have a ton of draft picks. They have way more cap room, much younger team. Falcons are old, no future quarterback. Just wait till, you know, the Jets hire Brian Daboll from the Bills, the OC. Mm. They keep Darnold. They trade back. They bring a bunch of draft picks in. So I think that it's going to be the New York football
Jets. All right, you slipped something in there that was obviously just a troll from earlier in the show. What, they're not going to keep Darnold if they get a new coach.
I don't know, buddy.
Who on this planet could become the coach and say, I want that guy as my quarterback?
Andy Reid, maybe? I don't know.
Andy Reid's not going to go coach the Jets. There's no person who might be considered for the job who'd want to keep him. So let me ask you this. This was a tweet Colin put out there, and I thought it was kind of an interesting point. He said, yes, you obviously draft Trevor Lawrence if you're the Jets, but if you could end up in the number 2 and then get a haul by trading for the number 2 instead of drafting Justin Fields,
Yes.
That's probably a better outcome overall, isn't it?
Yes.
I know. Yeah. I'm starting to talk myself into this maybe even being better than Trevor Lawrence, is to just get draft three more Mekhi Becktons.
Right. That's my point. If you, when that happens, you keep Sam Darnold.
No.
So who's your quarterback then?
I don't care. Flacco. Maybe we get Matt Stafford. Can we get Matt Stafford in New York?
Yeah, maybe get Carson Wentz.
I'll take my chances. Carson Wentz or Matt Stafford paying all that stupid money with a bunch of Mekhi Becktons in front of him. I like our chances of getting good faster than with Sam Darnold. All right, let's shift gears from teams that are barely in the NFL to college football teams that are very good. Playoff is set. We've got our four teams. We could have guessed the four that would be in. So my mind's already thinking about the future. I saw Stu Mandela, The Athletic, write about expanding to 8. He's on board now. That's been the discussion. So I want to know, Jeff, teams that should make the playoff next year, over under 5. Are we just expanding it even a little bit?
Not next year, but I've been a proponent of keeping it at 4, but it feels like that's just not good enough now. I think we go 6 first, hit the 5 conference winners plus 1. The plus 1's debatable. Do you want it to be group of 5? Do you want it to be the next best at-large team? The group of 5 thing is really interesting, Gabe, because we've seen some group of 5 upsets in BCS bowls, and we've seen some of them recently in these, whether the Peach Citrus Bowl, whatever the SEC loser. There's a real thing of a hangover after you lose the conference championship game. For example, the loser of the Pac-12 championship game is now 0-9 in the subsequent bowl games. Mm-hmm. The loser of the SEC championship game has lost to like UCF, has lost to Utah. So, like, there's a real thing. In a playoff atmosphere, when you put up Cincinnati and Alabama, when they're playing for an actual title, they're not playing just in a bowl game. They're playing for the title. They're a motivated Alabama team. Cincinnati loses that game by 35 points. Like, do we want to see... I don't want to see Alabama beat Notre Dame by 3 touchdowns either. But I also don't really want to see them... Like, there's a world in which Notre Dame can sort of maybe win that game, because they have some talent, they have some NFL players, they've won games this year, they beat Clemson early in the season, Brian Kelly's a good coach. Gabe, if you played Cincinnati-Alabama 100 times, Cincinnati keeps that game close 5 times and maybe wins once, right?
Am I
overblowing this?
Okay, but fine. So let me follow you down this path. If you expand it to 6 instead of 8, 8 is just the obvious, easy way that you get all the conference champs in and you have a few at large. So you're right. You put Cincinnati in.
But eight leads to 12, leads to 16. Like, it just continues to go on forever.
Fair enough. So let's go with 6.
Yeah.
And let's do it the way that the NFL used to do its conference seeding. So now we're going to give 2 teams byes. So we could have told you before the season started, it's going to be Clemson and Alabama getting the bye. Now we're going to have 4 teams who are obviously in another tier compete. And maybe, so now the SEC second best team gets in along with Cincinnati, or Pac-12 champ is in now instead of out. Maybe some upsets happen in there. Maybe a team gets hot. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe Cincinnati keeps it close 20 times out of 100. Isn't that worth finding out in those 4 in that little circle of 4, and then let them all get blasted by Clemson and Alabama?
I mean, at this point, Gabe, this conversation, not just between us, but just generally speaking, like, it's just, no one's ever going to be satisfied. I don't really care what they do, because look, here's the thing. Alabama and Clemson are the 2 best teams in the country, and it's not remotely close this year. Maybe Ohio State's the 3rd best team. It doesn't matter any format you have. Alabama or Clemson is going to win the championship. They're both not going to be upset. Like, let's say you have an 8-team bracket, okay? Maybe one of those 2 gets upset. The other one's going to win it all. And so, in my opinion, it's up to the other schools to catch up to them, which is hard to do because they have all the recruiting talent and they have all the play. I mean, it's just like, even watching that game this weekend, Alabama-Florida, I thought to myself, as good as I think Oregon can be, I don't know if they're ever going to be as good as Alabama.
But if you knew that winning the Pac-12 guaranteed you a spot in the playoff, or being the best of those other big five schools got you a spot. Don't you think the recruiting would reflect that over a few years?
I mean, we're recruiting as a top 10 classes now without being in the playoff. Right. I mean, we have three straight top 10 classes with no playoff opportunities.
I guess I just don't follow why nobody could ever catch up.
They're just, dude, they're just so talented right now. It's not that nobody can catch up. They could. And Oregon is trying their best. I mean, they have three straight top 10 classes. I mean, I think in two, here's the thing about, I'll just speak to Oregon specifically, because obviously I went there and I follow the program very well. Oregon is doing what USC did with Pete Carroll. They are amassing a large amount of talented NFL players on the offensive defensive lines. And that's how you have to compete in the South. And those USC teams could beat anybody, right? And they did. They won championships. They went in the South and they mauled teams, non-conference games, right? They just smashed teams. They played the greatest game ever against Texas. Could have gone either way, right? It was a toss-up game. Oregon is building a team in that manner. So in 2 years, I might have a different tune. But as of right now, no one in the Pac-12 can even remotely be close to those teams. If these recruits pan out, like we just had a five-star kid from Utah committed as a left tackle. We've had Kayvon Thibodeau, five-star, number one player in the country, killed USC on Friday night. If those guys continue to come in the program and play really well, then sure. But Alabama has a five-star near every position. Like, they have pros at almost every position. We are not there yet as a program. Can we get there in a couple of years? Yes, we can. So, like, that's my thing is I think that we play tough. We play physical. But it just, the talent of Alabama would overwhelm us. Until maybe in 2 years, I might change my opinion.
Okay. Well, if we're still doing this show, I'll ask you again in 2 years.
I mean, think about Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a team that puts offensive linemen in the NFL every single year. And Alabama mauls them when they play.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem fair, but I think you could close the gap a little bit if all these programs knew they were going to have a shot at a title. And a few of these conferences, I mean, including like the Big 12 at this point, they're like, oh, things are going to have to break our way.
Oklahoma's lost four playoff games.
Well, just for some perspective, since you mentioned Oklahoma, 22 of the 28 playoff berths since we've had this four-team system, 22 times it's been one of the following teams: Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That's it.
I looked at it as more of an indictment on like the Pac-12 than I blame the other schools for being good.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. I mean, it got started when your school was in there a few years.
Yeah. We the first year we beat Florida State and then lost to Ohio State. Yeah. Oregon has more playoff wins than does Oklahoma. We played within there one time.
Yeah. All right, let's stay out west. I'm wearing a Lakers shirt because the season starts Tuesday. So I'll just ask, over under 45.5 wins for the Lakers this year. Know that the season is shortened to 72 instead of 82. So, you know, our normal kind of eye line is a little shifted. But best guess, you taking the over on Lakers?
Isn't there a win total in Vegas higher than that?
Jeff, this isn't Vegas. I'm sitting in El Segundo, California, my friend. And right here, the number
I would say over 45.5, yes.
Okay. What's the number that I can't get you to go over?
You said 72 games, right?
I believe that's right.
Probably maybe 57, 58. Oh, okay. I probably wouldn't go over
so
that.
So you're expecting a dominant run all season long. This isn't just to turn it on in the postseason. They're going to be winners.
They added some really good pieces in via draft and free agency, not via draft, via free agency and trades, I should say. So I think they added pieces to where like LeBron can take a night off and they can still win games.
Yeah. Certain games they for sure can give him a rest and they still have enough people who can score. I want to ask you this and then we can leave on some chicken talk. Do you think that LeBron is trying to stick around until his son is drafted so they can play together?
I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun to watch Tiger Woods and his son play this weekend. I think LeBron might be doing that. Yes.
It was so cool to see Tiger's kid. I know, you know, people have mixed emotions about Tiger, but I don't know, man, just the way they edited those videos together, the fist pumps and the red and the swing and just the way they stand and address putts. All of it was cool, man. It was really cool. And seeing LeBron with his kid doing that on a basketball court would be unbelievable.
It would be a lot of fun. I mean, it was very fun to watch Tiger Woods. And like, you have kids now, so you know this. The pride you get of like your kids doing things well is better than anything you do. Like, it's fantastic. And so that must have been so cool for him.
Yeah, also, well, I mean, I don't know what it would be like to have a kid as talented as his son seems to be at golf, but even minor crap that probably isn't all that impressive to a parent blows your mind. Like, you know, just the proper pronunciation of a new word. I'm like, kid's a genius. I mean.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, my kid can do this. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, over under, this is in the rundown and for reasons that I don't actually understand. And I don't know if there's news here that you need to share. Over under chances you get noob chickens, 50%. Did you have another chicken massacre?
So we, last night, so my daughter goes and plays with the chickens all the time. We let them roam our yard. And my daughter plays with them all the time. And yesterday, she goes outside and she's like, Daddy, Mommy, Blueberry, the blue one. Blueberry is not moving.
Uh-oh.
She's just laying there and she's dead. And I was like, Emmy, she's not dead. She's just taking a nap. So my wife peers out the door and she's dead as can be. She said my daughter was, she said she saw her playing out there with Blueberry and a hawk like killed her or something. I don't, there was no blood or nothing. Maybe just like, I don't know how the hawk got her. But she said Emmy was out there like trying to pick the bird's head up. And then every time she would let the bird's head go, just would flop back down. So it was as dead as can be. And it literally just died. It had just died. Because Emmy went outside and I said, Emmy, do you see a bird out there? She goes, yeah, I saw a big bird next to Blueberry. And it was the hawk who was like, I don't know.
So do you think that these animals, the hawk or the raccoons or whatever it was last, are they just scaring the chickens to death? Literally just scaring them to have heart attacks?
I've thought that actually, especially with the raccoon, because only one of the birds had blood on it.
Yeah.
There was no blood. I think they just get, and these I've been told are softer chickens. And like they, I think they just have a heart attack and die. Because the only one of the birds, like I said, the first time the raccoons got them, there was no blood.
Yeah.
Except one of them. I don't know what happened.
My mind.
And this one had no blood. I picked it up, put my gloves on. We picked it up. I looked it over. It was nothing. Put in a trash bag, threw in the trash.
Not sure you're supposed to admit that, but okay.
Where are you supposed to put it?
I don't know because I don't own livestock, so I'm not sure what you're supposed to do. I'm guessing there's a procedure.
Well, we have three left, and they'll be gone within probably 2 weeks as the hawk just takes them down. This has been a failed experiment. I reinforced the coop. The raccoons have not gone in. The raccoons have been fine. No problem.
Goodbye land. It's by air that you have a problem.
Yeah, but dude, I can't do it. You know how expensive it is to buy like a cage to put in the backyard so the birds don't get murked by the hawk? It's just like, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I just want a dog. I just want like a fluffy puppy German Shepherd just delivered to my house.
I think when we get after the season and we have time for it, I think we still need to have your wife on the show to talk about what the goal is here with the chickens, because it does seem like a failure.
Well, they're not going to be, they probably won't even be here till February. I mean, the rate we're going, I feel bad. I like the chickens. I don't want animals to die. That's not what I'm doing this for.
No, clearly.
But I mean, it's just like, it's just,
have you considered maybe getting an even more vicious, deadly bird of prey to be sort of a defense against hawks and raccoons? Like, do you get an eagle or something to perch near the chickens?
I should get a fake eagle and put it right, like on the roof. I bought these deflector things that supposedly work. You put them in the ground, they spin and they deflect like the light around, so birds get all disoriented. Not my birds, like the falcon or the hawk. It's just, on a positive note, my wife rented arcade games to put in the garage for 3 months.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know if you saw this development. So we got a claw machine, skee ball, pop a shot, and I asked for NFL Blitz or NBA Jam. We'll see how it goes.
I hope you get NBA Jam. Well, I mean, it sounds like your defense is as hopeless on behalf of your chickens as all defenses are against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Yes. It sounds like it's just unstoppable. So good luck. I hope it's not a mess the next few weeks. We'll check in on that again soon. But thank you for making me smarter on a number of topics. And basically, I'm where I was. It's the Chiefs for sure, and probably the Packers. And we'll find out next week if that changes.
I'm with you. All right, guys. Have a great couple of days. Three straight winning weeks. Almost back to 500. Getting so close. Feeling it. 2 weeks left the regular season. So we'll have a lot of fun with this. All right, guys. Have a great couple of days. Talk to you guys on Thursday.